kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's the last name? I gotta know the pronunciation of this one.
Yeah, that's pretty incomprehensible. My last name is pronounced Hadzigeorgiadis.
What?
Yeah, okay, I warn you. It's Hadzigeorgiadis.
Wow.
That is incredible.
I think that's the most complicated last name I've ever heard. That's really awesome, actually. I wish my last name was that complicated. Mine is Greenwood.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Going to be a fun show this time. We have Sergio and Nikos. I'm not even going to bother with their last names, but they're coming on to chat about the game Gore Script. That is a fun chat. But we are going to kick things off here with CJ. CJ, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Well, it's great that I'm here, you know. I feel like it's an honor to be on the show.
You're here on a weekend.
Yeah, I was on here last week, or not last weekend, the weekend before that too.
So. Yeah, one of them. I don't know. But you're going to be doing a review in a little bit, but we are going to kick things off. We actually have some giveaways to do. Giveaway.
That's weird too. Yeah.
How crazy is that? Yeah, we have two codes for the Speedrunners Deluxe Pack, which, you know, Speedrunners is a game with gold title right now, but the deluxe version gives you all the skins and trails included.
Trails?
I've been doing a lot of talking today.
And if you lose gold, you don't have to worry about losing the game.
Yeah, exactly. So let's start off with giving away these Speedrunner codes. We have four entries and two codes to give away. So let us kick things off. John Harvey writes in saying, I would like to win the deluxe edition of Speedrunners on Xbox One. I could say it's because deluxe is the way to go for the definitive version of the game and that the extra content adds to the replayability and look interesting. Blah-de-blah, blah, yakety smackety, etc. But it will all be BS. The truth is that I want the flame trails. I want to chuckle to myself and say, great Scott Marty, we need to go back to the future. Every time, and I mean every time, it appears. What can I say? Simple things for simple minds. Thanks for the chance, and good luck to everyone who enters. So, John Harvey, back to the future.
Yep, that's exactly what I put.
Next one is from Latin Ruler, who says, good evening to the SML Podcast. I played the game Speedrunners and seeing characters currently available was great. I played the game using the pink character, which I thought was cool playing with it, but recently discovered they have a golden character in the trails, which is in the deluxe edition. I truly enjoyed the speedrunning in the game. I'd love to become the golden character if I'm chosen. Thanks so much for this golden opportunity.
Oh, there you go.
That's terrible.
I'm inclined to agree.
Next email is from Angel Santos, who says, hey, Joe, beach body speedrunner to run all the maps a la Baywatch.
Interesting.
Beach bod. Because the question was, tell us what skin or trail you are most looking forward to.
Okay.
And then final email from
Aroto
Tomato, who just says, I want your skin.
That's interesting.
So.
So we got some hard choices to make here, just because there isn't really a big flashing sign over any of them, aside from John Harvey's.
I'm a fan of John's, yeah. I like John with the Back to the Future.
And it seemed like a very legitimate entry.
And now I think that it comes down to golden opportunity or just the simplicity of I want your skin.
I mean, I think I got to give it to Latin Ruler just because he mentioned at least a skin in the game. Like, and while it's funny what Arota said, I do think that Latin wants it more.
All right, sounds good. We'll give it to Latin Ruler and John Harvey. Arota gets the runner-up prize of nothing for making us laugh.
But, and Angel gets nothing and no runner-up prize.
Angel can work to get a beach bot, I guess.
Good luck.
And then one more giveaway to do, because we're just chock full of shit to give away. We have the game Black and White Bushido to give away. This works out really well because we have 5 entries and 5 codes.
So no losers.
So no losers, but we're still going to read the emails because that's what we do. First up is from Johnny X, who says, "Hey there, the reason I want Black and White Bushido is because I love beat-em-ups and this game looks really great and fun to play, and also because I'm a ruthless stone-cold ninja assassin. A fan from your podcast, and keep up the good work. Best regards, Johnny X." Johnny, you are getting a copy of Black and White Bushido. Next up is John Harvey, who says, "I'd love to win Black and White Bushido on Xbox One. The reason being that most of my games are single-player campaigns with long involved storylines and complex game mechanics. I love these games, but they aren't the type of game you could play with mates on the couch after a few beers. This game, on the other hand, seems like it would be best played as a couch co-op game. It's so much more satisfying to beat the person sitting next to you instead of an anonymous gamer tag from a random place, and that's why I'd like a copy. I want to look my friends in the eyes when I attack them from the shadows with my katana and then dance around until they acknowledge who is the greatest."
I think that would have won a copy regardless of how many copies we had.
Indeed. So John is getting 2 games today. Next is from Robert M, who says, "Hi-ho, thanks for your great work, and thanks for a chance to win the Bushido game. I love that style of game so much, and I also love Indian arcade games. Thanks for the chance." Well, good news, you're getting a copy of the game.
Nice.
Billy P. writes in and says, "I don't know if you remember, but when you were giving away Kirinaga's Revenge, I said I was looking for more games to play with my brother. This looks like a really cool concept for a multiplayer game and one I could see me and my brother having fun with. I also feel like this is a good game for us to play for a couple hours every other week." Well, Billy, you and your brother, Brother P, I guess, you're going to play.
And Billy and Brother P.
Billy and Brother P. Final emails from John Snow, who says, "Hey, SML, did you know that Bushido means the samurai way of life? I know what Joe's way of life is. Cats."
I thought he was going to say food.
Oh, fuck you. "Back in the time where Black and White Bushido took place, cats had an important job as guardians of the Buddhist temple manuscripts. Basically, they would kill all the mice that would try and chew up the papers. Only the richest people could afford them by the 10th century. Pretty cool. I'd love to play this game in front of my cat to see if it brings back any centuries-old dormant instincts. Thanks for the chance."
Interesting. I like that one, too.
I gotta say, if it came down to picking winners, I think John Snow and John Harvey would be the 2. Almost 3 fucking Johns in that contest.
Yeah, I know. It's like, how many fucking Johns are going to win? Don't get confused and send 2 copies to the same guy.
But congrats to everybody who sent us an email, because you're all getting a copy of the game. So rock on. If you didn't win, it's your own fucking fault for not sending us an email on that one, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. You had the chance. It was pretty good odds either way.
Very true. We do have a handful of reviews to get to. I know you and I are each going to do one now, and then Eternal Rage is going to join us. Pernell's going to join. Well, not us, me, because
yeah,
you're bailing.
I was
going to
say, us is a strong word.
Yes. It's the royal we. And then Jacob Garner also emailed in some reviews, so I'll be reading those a little bit later as well. But we're going to kick things off with Tokyo 42, developed by SMAC Games or Smack Games, published by Mode 7. It released May 31st on Xbox One and Steam for $19.99. PS4 release is planned for sometime mid-July. Tokyo 42 is a hyper-stylish, isometric open-world shooter. Frame for murder you didn't commit, Commit, you'll dive into a world of assassins, deadly corporate intrigue, and cats. Explore this beautifully handcrafted micro Tokyo and discover its secrets.
Seems like this game was made for you.
Well, the cats aren't like, it's not super catty. Actually, everything in this game is very small, first off. Like the text, the characters, sometimes it's just very hard to see what the fuck is going on. And not just that, but like reading important information. And I'm playing, like, I have a 65-inch TV. So,
do you think maybe that's the issue, is the fact that it's the same screen size for everybody, so it stretches it out too much?
No, because the text should be bigger that way. I would be scared to like play this on a 32-inch or, I don't know, everything is very small. But anyway, the way the game plays is it's isometric view, and it is very similar to like the old school GTA games, but with the isometric view instead of a top-down view. You do have the ability to turn the camera, like it has 8 degrees of camera angles that you can have. The problem is the isometric view always seems to have buildings or something blocking things that you need to see. I've had times where I'm trying to infiltrate a stronghold and clear it out to get rid of the gang in the area, and I'll turn the camera to what I think would be a good vantage point, and there's just a building.
That's annoying. You'd think, like, I know other games that have similar isometric views that, like, make the building, just, like, transparent.
Yeah.
So this game doesn't do that. Okay. No.
Those buildings are there, and they're going to stay there. And if they're in your way, move the camera and hope that you can find a better vantage point. They also have, like, a distance blur effect to it. So if you're trying to look at something in the distance, I'll go back to the same stronghold that I'm trying to get into. I couldn't get a good sideways angle because of a building in the way. So I went to a behind my back viewpoint looking forward onto it. And all the enemies down below were blurry because they were in the distance.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing, though?
It wasn't good at that time. Like, I can understand the use of that to give things a sense of depth and whatnot, but the fact that it was just straight up interfering in what I was trying to do. The actual gameplay is really, really cool. Similar to the old school GTA style games, you get missions, you have to either like wipe out a gang or you have an assassination target because you were framed for a murder. So clearly the thing that you do in this game is become an assassin
because that will get you off the case.
But in this world, everybody is on a drug that prevents you from dying.
Okay, so then how did you murder anybody?
Because they weren't on their meds.
Interesting.
They stopped taking their medications, and they were found dead.
Then isn't that their fault?
I guess.
But like, why are you in trouble?
That also explains why when you die, you just warp back to where you were. So, yeah.
Does the area, like, reset with all the enemies, or is it just right back?
Sometimes there are, like, if you were working on clearing out a stronghold or if you're in a mission or something and you die, it will reset what was going on. Like in a mission, you basically start fresh from the beginning of the mission or a checkpoint if you got to one. Clearing out the strongholds, like if you die, I died on one, like I had a really frustrating glitch where there was a stronghold at the top of a building, and the easiest way to get to the top of the building was to jump on top of an elevator and ride it to the top of the roof. I was lobbing grenades to the top and, you know, luring people down off the building one by one till there was one guy left up top, and I figured I would just ride the elevator up and take him out stealth-wise with a katana. I jumped on the elevator moved up, and I glitched through the elevator. and fell off the world map and died.
Ow, that's annoying.
And it reset the entire thing.
Oh, that sucks. I mean, it makes sense. It would make the game incredibly easy if you could just keep respawning exactly where you were with everything there.
The most frustrating part of that is that wasn't the first time I glitched through an elevator trying to ride it. So
elevators are glitchy in this game?
it was frustrating that happened. The shooting in the game, you know, you can either shoot or you can use melee weapons. I actually really enjoyed doing the melee stuff because stealth-wise, it's silent, so you don't have to worry about it. Shooting is either twin stick where you just hold in a direction and shoot. Differences in elevation will lead you to miss a lot, but you can click on the one stick and it turns into like a free aiming, and if you aim onto someone, no matter what their elevation is, it aims it at them. Granted, walls or buildings could still get in the way, but, you know,
that
happens. There is a nemesis system in place, so people that you may have killed through the game, you know, because no one really dies in the game, they might hold a grudge, and you'll get a warning that a nemesis is out to assassinate you.
What's the point? You come back.
To keep you on your toes.
I feel like it's a fine game and it seems cool, but it feels like it's just, why? What's the point in any of it?
You come back. You're fighting against these rival assassination groups as well, so it's not just people you've killed, it's people who want you dead.
But you're not going to be dead.
But they're going to delay you enough to take the jobs that you're stealing from them.
Okay, see, that at least that gives me a little bit of an idea. It's like, okay, if it delays them, then sure.
Yeah. The problem is...
I want a reason why.
The problem is, like, those nemesis dudes would show up at, like, the worst times. I had them show up during my stronghold attacks, and you'll never notice them until it's usually too late, where it'll be like, hey, there's a nemesis, and it could be anybody, any one of the citizens roaming the area.
You have to actually spot them and figure out who it is.
Yeah, out of nowhere, you might see a red dot appear above someone's head, and they're the nemesis, and you saw that dot because they're about to fuck you up.
Can you just kill random civilians until eventually you get them?
You can, but it affects your, like, there's a scoring system in the game, which I still don't really get the need of the score in the game. Like, when you would die, it would show, like, these are the guys you killed and you earn points, and then, like, citizens killed and you would lose points. I don't know what the fucking score's for, though. Like,
there's no, like, leaderboard or anything?
Not that I know of, because it's a story-driven game.
This seems weird that there's a score in the first place in a game like that.
I don't know. Weird. On the upside, there's tons of save points and areas that you can, like, save your progress as you're going through. A downside is that a single save point can't be used multiple times in a row. So if you accomplish something and you want to save what you did, you either have to move forward until you find a new save point or backtrack further to a different save point.
It's
a nuisance, but it's nothing too horrible, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It just makes the game take longer.
Just a weird, like, decision, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it's...
Yeah.
I'm not a programmer, so I don't know how that shit works. Overall, the game is really, really cool, but between the camera being in the way more often than it really should be, and just the fact that in gunfights, you feel severely outnumbered at all times. And even if you're crouching behind a wall, I've been shot in the head. And I'm like, why the fuck did I get hit? I was hiding behind a wall that they shouldn't be able to hit me through. I mean, there's tons and tons of stuff to do in this game and tons of collectibles to find. it's just, there's so many of those tiny little issues that I can't give it a buy it, but it is incredibly cool. The visual style in the game is awesome. It's definitely worth checking out, but just know that there's some frustrating shit in there that you're going to have to look past.
That makes sense.
I give it a try it, and I would hope to see, I would actually love to see them put in a different camera that lets you like go overhead or at least adjust the angle of things, but I don't know how that would affect how the game works, or at least like make buildings disappear if they're in the way. It's just frustrating.
Yeah, that would, just making buildings like almost completely transparent, not even like fully, just enough to, that you can see through it, would be a huge difference.
And something else I would like to see in the game, if devs, if you're listening to this, let me switch the camera rotation on the bumpers. Because you use the bumpers to twist the camera left and right, I always click the wrong direction that I want.
What, is it like, flipped?
Well, no, it's like you click it to go, you know, you click right to turn the camera right. It's just in my brain, I have that whole inverted setting. So I expect to click it one way and have it move the other way. But just it, my brain doesn't work well with what's there. I would like the option to be able to flip the directions. I don't know if it was buried in the options, but I didn't see anything. So.
Okay.
It really is a cool game, though. I hope that they work on patching some of the little issues and gripes that I have with it, because it's a really, really cool game. I love the style of it. So, your turn for a review, because you are going to talk about Flat Heroes, developed by Parallel Circles, published by our friends at Deck 13. This one released September 8th on Steam Early Access for $7.99, and we're talking about it now because it was just recently announced that it's coming to the Nintendo Switch. So we're looking at the game before it comes out for the Switch, probably over the summer sometime. Flat Heroes is a minimalist, super intense local multiplayer game with cooperative and competitive modes for 1-4 players that features squares. I love that description.
Yep. Well, it's about accurate.
So, what is Flat Heroes?
All right. Well, obviously, right out the gates, even in the description, it pretty much makes you assume that it's mainly a multiplayer game. And I'll say right off the bat, I couldn't play any multiplayer because I don't have any friends locally that would want to play a game like this. I don't play local games. I play online, so that's... I mean, it's not a downside to the game because I don't see how this would work in online. There'd probably be too much latency for this game, and this game is very much about like exact timing and everything. The game itself, I was just playing the campaign mode, and that consisted of platforming levels where instead of like going to a goal or something, your goal is just to survive all the things that happen. Like, the first couple levels are really simple, and there's just some little platforms you can jump around, and there will be bullets that spawn, and they'll start shooting at you from a direction, like maybe they'll all spawn on the top layer of the map. And so all of them will shoot down towards the bottom, and if you just stand under a platform, all the bullets will be blocked by the platform, and so on. And then it gets a little more complicated, like you'll find these tracking darts, I guess you'd call them, that explode when they get close to you and they turn red. And so you gotta try to dodge around those while also dodging bullets. And pretty quickly, this game gets very hard. The first boss was annoying because instead of working like any other thing in the game, it was kind of like a weird thing that would dash towards you, and you'd have to just keep dodging it and making it hit the ground. And every time it hit the ground, it would do a little bit of damage to itself. And then eventually a layer would break of its armor, and then it would go a little bit faster. And then once you broke all of its armor, it would go so fast that I couldn't dodge it. It became incredibly difficult to actually dodge the thing. And maybe it's just I wasn't really understanding how the jumping system worked because it was really weird. There seems to be an emphasis on the ability to like wall jump. But it's really odd because I would just stick to a wall and keep pressing A. and try to move into a direction, and either I'd fall or I'd get lucky and finally make a jump. And it doesn't really seem like a jump, but more of a dash. And so it's a little bit hard to actually control the game or try to understand what you're actually trying to do, because there's no tutorial in the game teaching you how the stuff works. It just drops you in and you learn from experience, which, I mean, I've never been a fan of teaching you like that. I prefer if the game actually tells you what's going on a little bit. But, I mean, oh well, it's simple enough. It's not like it's rocket science, yeah. Dodge bullets. the jumping system could use a little bit of explaining. Other than that, like, I didn't really have any problems. I like the design. It's very simplistic, not a whole lot going on. Looks nice, though. It's clean. You play as a little tiny square, so, I mean, there's not a whole lot of character, story to it. It's just, like, there's a campaign, but it's just worlds. It's not really, like, a story mode.
Yeah.
I wish I could talk more about the actual multiplayer, because that's where it really seems to show. And well, I don't have any experience with that.
Let's do some speculation. Does this seem like it's going to be something really good for the Switch, given that you can detach the two Joy-Con and play pretty much multiplayer with one system?
I mean, that'd be cool, but it's so hard for me to say, like, if this game would work great on the Switch, seeing as I have no experience with the Switch. I have no idea how the Switch actually plays.
Well,
I mean, I know what it is, but, I mean, it's just...
Well, you know the two little Joy-Con that attach to the
sides.
Yeah,
you can turn those into two different controllers. Yeah. I mean, that would be really neat. I don't know how the multiplayer mode is to tell you if that would be a great idea or if the campaign's way better. But, I mean, it looks like a game that would be great for local multiplayer.
Cool. So for $8 on Steam, what are your thoughts?
I really want to give it a fuck it, why not? But I think that the game's a tad bit too expensive to give that. So, I mean, I'd guess just a recommended try it. If you have friends to play it, I think you'd have a lot of fun with it. The campaign mode is interesting, but not something that'll keep you playing for hours on end.
Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to it coming to the Switch. Should be fun, and hopefully we'll be able to talk about that version when it comes along. But I guess that's it for you tonight, huh?
Yeah, I guess so.
Cool. So you get out of here, and I'm going to get Eternal in here instead.
Okay, doozles. See ya.
Next game to talk about is called The Walking Dead, A New Frontier, Episode 5, From the Gallows. To take care of this one, Cole Martin is back on the show. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. We've missed you. It's been a little bit.
We've had a coal shortage lately.
I know.
I've been a lot of coal to go around.
You've been busy, I guess, with XGR, huh?
Yeah. You guys have to borrow me. I'm on loan. Pass me back and forth like table saw. Please pass the coal.
I'll just be like Frodo and throw a fucking bitch fit if you don't do stuff for us.
Yeah.
why don't you do more stuff for me? Anyway, episode 5 of The Walking Dead, A New Frontier, developed and published by Telltale Games. It released May 30th on pretty much every platform on the fucking planet for $4.99 or part of the season pass. In Telltale's most tailored episode to date, Richmond teeters on the brink of collapse as chaos reigns from all directions. The lives of its citizens and all those closest to Javier hang in the balance. The decisions you've made and the bonds you've nurtured across the season will determine which characters now trust Javi to safeguard all they hold dear as the crisis pushes every relationship past its breaking point.
So I want to specify, this will be spoiler free for episode 5, but I can't promise it will be spoiler free for episode 4.
Oh, that's fine.
And it's also kind of hard to even be spoiler free for episode 5 because there's a character that at the end of episode 4, we see Kate in the truck. She smashes into the walls. And things may not have happened in that little scenario that we think might have happened. Things may go a little differently. And Javi may not be as on his own as we think he might be.
Vague booking.
Yeah, it's so hard too. Like I've thought all week for the last 2 days. it has been almost a week. Yeah. I really had to think about how I was gonna word this because I don't want to give away. It was a genuine surprise when I started this episode, and within just a few minutes you're like because it definitely does not go the way you think it's going to go. And even like the trailers and the art and stuff for this episode are misleading. It leads you to believe that a certain series of events occurs that
so does not. Basically episode 5 takes everything you thought you knew and flips it on its ear.
Very well.
Nice.
And this with episode 5, as is normal with the Telltale games, this is when all of your decisions come back to really fuck you in the face. And this one is no different. And the decisions that you've made, even up until the middle of this episode, you're going to make decisions that are going to decide who is still with you at the end. And normally that would mean, in some of the past Telltale games, that would mean that, people would just turn their back on you or not go with you on a certain adventure or what have you. In this instance, though, it could even be a matter of life and death, and you could result in some unexpected demises. I caused somebody to die that I... Yeah.
Well, that happens in every Telltale game. You are going to kill people whether you wanted to or not.
I think what was funny was seeing other people make decisions that I thought at the time would be much more damning. And then they got to the end and I'm like, but they died when I played. How come you get to keep them alive? You fucked them over. So in this instance, you know, you might think you're making the best decision to keep everybody on your team. And you're going to find you got to dig a few holes.
No, that's the beauty of the Telltale games, I guess.
It is. It was very... I don't know that I even want to say it was shocking. Although I feel like the one death that I caused was much more lackluster. Like, because it was a specific character, I expected it to be a more dramatic death.
Hmm.
Technically, there were two of them. So I expected to see more, you know, I don't know, a giant explosion like at the end of episode 4. For me, I felt like it was daunting and I was kind of choked up. But I thought, well, that was still kind of lackluster because at the end of episode 1, I think it is, when Mariana gets shot, I was just like... You know, I screamed and I was I was hoarse for a day after. I was just so caught, shocked. And then the major death that I caused that other people did not, when I did it, I just kind of sat there and I was a little shocked, but I wasn't quite as emotionally moved, even though I intentionally caused those deaths, you know, indirectly, maybe a little more than intentionally. Intentionally, indirectly? I caused the death. And I didn't cause Mariana's, so I shouldn't... Well, maybe I kind of did. Shit. Shit, Telltale.
Well, we clearly can't go into details, since you don't want to spoil anything. So, right. I know one of the critiques of the season has been the episodes have been significantly shorter than in the past. Is that the same with episode 5?
Yeah, it is. And it was, there were a few moments where you complete a chapter and pop the achievement, and then you'd maybe click the button 5 or 6 times, no quick time event or anything, and it'd be like, pop, oh, you completed another chapter. And I'm like, wait.
Oh, wow.
Where's the rest of it? Yeah, I was expecting that to go on a little longer.
Yeah.
So the whole game feels shorter, especially in comparison to, say, season 2, season 1 and season 2. even more so because, and I complained about this before, but that replayability, the drive to replay isn't there because there's no achievements or anything for, you know, completing different endings. So you can just kind of do yours, get the achievement, and then maybe go look on YouTube to see what somebody else got, or Twitch or whatever, and or Mixer. you know, but you can just go watch somebody else do it and get the same effect.
Yeah.
And so it was like, it made it feel even shorter than it had already felt.
Yeah.
It just kind of compounded the problem, if you will. But it's a really good story. I found myself caring a little more about Javier than I thought I was going to. I was just kind of like, oh, look, another throwaway character that Clementine is going to have to shoot in the head at the end. It's cool. Let's go. And
well, don't tell us if he gets shot in the head or not. You shouldn't.
I'm not gonna carry on from there.
well, normally we would ask your verdict on the episode, but since it's the end of the season, it's the end of the 5-episode series, just give us the complete wrap-up. As a series, as Walking Dead, A New Frontier, what is your verdict on A New Frontier?
I give it a definite buy it. It's classic Telltale, but they've done a good job with the story and the twist. It's shocking enough, and you'll invest in the characters more, like I said, more than I thought I would, for sure. I was kind of just like, oh, this guy, meh. But I found myself caring at the end, like, is he going to make it? What happens now? Where do they go from here? And of course, you've got to know what happens to Clementine.
True.
Clementine will remember that. You have to know if she remembered that. And spoiler alert, she will remember that.
So, final question I have. Does it lead up to an obvious season 4?
Yes. Yes.
Shocking. That blows my mind.
Nobody saw that coming.
Totally. But
yeah, there's an obvious season 4, and there's two very distinct ways they could go with it. Yeah, as far as who becomes the protagonist.
Well, we will we will end on that note so you don't give any other hints.
I would like to throw one more thing out there.
Okay.
It's currently on sale for $19.99.
Well, there you go. So, well, did they make the first episode free already? Because I know usually...
I don't think so.
Because I know but usually I know near the end of the series, they'll just make the first one free and be like, hey, fuckers, get in on the first one and then pay us $20 for the rest.
Get addicted to it and then pay. But I do know for a fact that this season is on sale for I think it's $19.95 or $19.99. One or the other. It's on sale. And the other ones are up to 90% off, and that is on Steam at least, and I'm pretty sure Xbox as well. So you can just get the whole Walking Dead series for pennies if you don't have them already, and enjoy and have fun.
Well, that all comes down to when this episode releases, because if it releases Monday, they have a couple of hours left. If it releases Tuesday, sale's probably over. So, Cole, thank you as always for coming on and telling us about The Walking Dead, and I know you'll be back on sooner than it was in between your last time.
Indeed. Thanks for having me.
All right, next up, we have two mobile games to talk about, and we have an email sent in from our friend Jacob Garner to talk about these. So let us kick things off with Monster Buster World Invasion, developed and published by Tag of Joy. It released May 24th on iOS and Android. It's a free-to-play game with microtransactions. Explore your city with your smartphone and find rare monsters from parallel universes invading our world. Detect, engage, fight, and capture. Then head out to your next big adventure. The thrill of the chase is on, Jacob has to say. Monster Buster World Invasion by Tag of Joy is an AR exploratory game with RPG elements included, putting monsters in your world, letting you capture them, and making them fight other monsters for you to capture. I feel like this trope has been done a couple of times, but it brings some new stuff to the table. If you thought Pokemon Go wasn't hardcore enough because it never truly makes you get up off your ass, then Monster Buster might be the game for you. Do you have monsters nearby? Heck yeah, and it gives helpful directions and distance amounts for you to go. Although new features such as battling trainers has been announced for the summer in Pokemon Go, Monster Buster has essentially beat them to the punch, as you can battle monsters out in the wild and add them to your collection. I thought that the basic mechanics of the game were pretty fun, and although the game has supposedly been updated to allow you to play from home, I have yet to see this feature. More on that later. Without that feature, I feel like it puts disabled, shut-ins, parents, and busy gamers at huge disadvantage because we don't all have the time or the ability to walk all over the place to find new monsters. I have a son who is nearly 3, and I thought it would be fun to play this game while we were out for a walk, but some of the monsters were in areas that weren't safe for me to take my kid. Lack of sidewalks, other people's property, high grass out in the country, etc. Nor are the battles short enough for me to get my kid to sit still while I fight a monster who isn't really there. But if you got plenty of time on your hands and feel like walking all over the damn place, this is a great game to play. There's some advanced gameplay that involves creating cookies and drinks, which have different gameplay abilities. Of course, you have to gather the ingredients, which means fighting more monsters and finding treasure chests. You get the idea. The art style is very unique, and you can tell the developers took their time to invent the monsters, not slapping them together or making obvious Pokemon or Digimon clones. Another aspect I like about the game is that they understand that we all upgrade our phones or move to a different type of phone, so you can save your progress with a Facebook login or Game Center login for Apple users, thus meaning you never have to start over from scratch. That's a huge plus, and I don't know why more game developers aren't making use for it. Monster Buster World Invasion is a great game for those who are looking for a bigger challenge along the lines of Pokemon Go, but definitely requires time and energy that not everyone has. I'm definitely recommending that you check it out, but I will warn you that the latest update to the iOS version has been causing immediate game crashes on my phone. I've emailed the developers, and hopefully they can figure out what's causing it, because I think this is a game that you all need to try. If you have a Windows phone, it's already out, and a worldwide iOS and Android launch should be happening soon. And by soon, it already happened, and he's slow to the punch on this. Next game that he is writing in about is called Bambosher, developed by Saurus Productions. It released May 25th on iOS as a free-to-play game. Once upon a time, Sally reigns supreme as the chief bully at her school, Posh Prep. After transferring to a new school, Sally must establish her bully credentials all over again, but Sally didn't count on Winston, a brave student at Stalwart Elementary who isn't afraid to stand up to Sally and the rest of her gang. Run, jump, and slide to avoid obstacles scattered throughout the school and playground, or use your trusty straw to hurl spitballs at those bullies and teach them a lesson. Jacob has to say, Bambosher Bring Down the Bullies, created by Saurus Productions, is a 2D runner game that has you, the hero of the elementary school, taking down bullies and saving the day with your spitballs and amazing reflexes. Let's get this out of the way. The art is the best thing about this game. The world looks like a huge chalkboard drawing, and it looks unique and fantastic. Easily helps this game stand out from the rest, but it kind of goes downhill from there. The game is your standard runner. You avoid traps or enemies, collect coins, and see how far you can go. Along the way, you'll rescue kids from their lockers, which gives you more coins. The game's difficulty is addicting, but it's also its biggest liability. The game is extremely unforgiving. It is free to play, after all. So hitting a balloon by a millimeter will cause you to lose significant amounts of health fairly quickly. I spent quite a bit of time trying to figure out how to time my jumps and double jumps, but the amount of precision needed is ridiculous, especially for a mobile game. Thankfully, you're given 3 lives to use because you'll run through them fairly quickly, as the controls never feel intuitive. There's no way to change the controls, which has you shooting spitballs with your left thumb while swiping up or down with your right thumb to jump or slide. The game kind of rewards you for having gone further in the game, allowing you to have power-ups, and if you collect enough coins, you can upgrade your stats or your power-ups. Going back to the insane precision, freeing kids from their lockers requires you to tap a lifesaver early enough. If it gets too far on the screen, even if you haven't passed it yet, it'll be too late and you'll have to continue moving on. Is Bambosher a bad game? Hardly. There's plenty of cool stuff here to be found, but unforgiving difficulty means you'll have a lot of short, frustrating games that may make you not want to stick around to earn anything to make your experience better. Those of you who listen to my reviews know that I always judge a mobile game by its ability to be played on the go, and while Bambosher definitely meets the criteria, I can see this being a game that begs you to rage quit instead of giving you a game that you'll willingly want to come back to. And if you aren't willing to stick it out for the long haul, more than 10 minutes at a time, you're going to find something else to occupy your time. Bambosher is an iOS game I recommend due to its unique presentation and addicting difficulty, and hopefully it can attract some gamers who would normally skip this genre for something more challenging. So, there's that. thanks to Jacob for sending those in, and I guess we'll move on. And the final batch of games to talk about tonight, we are bringing in our good friend Pernell Vaughn. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Doing good. Just wish I were better at shopping for faucet heads. Yeah, you would think it wouldn't be such a tumultuous issue, scenario there, but you'd be wrong. I went to Home Depot twice trying to get proper faucet heads. Failed both times. I was like, you know, screw the hell of this. I'm going to a freaking like small time store, see if I can get the guy to like be buttered up. I was like, look here, man, I don't know what I'm doing. I know you're a nice ma and pa type place. Do what you gotta do to be my friend and help me find the product that I need here.
Interesting.
It's amazing. It's something so simple.
You lead a crazy life, Pernell.
Wild and adventurous, man. Women just can't hang with this. You can't roll with faucet shopping.
Speaking of wild and adventurous, you've got two pretty cool games to talk about tonight, and we are going to kick it off with Locke's Quest, developed by Digital Continue, published by THQ Nordic. This one released May 30th on Xbox One and PS4 for $19.99. Build defenses and battle against the Clockwork Horde in this 2D action RPG/tower defense hybrid. Experience a gripping story which unfolds as you progress through 75 days of warfare, aided by a collection of turrets, traps, and special attacks. I know this one was a remake of an old DS game that got like the whole HD-ified treatment. So, Pernell, what did you think of Locke's Quest?
I personally think that this game deserved a second shot because it came out on the DS and reviewers raved about it, but I don't think it sold very well, unfortunately. So playing it on the Xbox One gave me a chance to give it give it like a second shot and hopefully come away thinking this game was worth a go. And you know what? I did feel that way. It is definitely a legit product. The DS game launched at $35 when it came out. This one sells for $20. It got a nice visual update along with it. There's no voices, which some people might think is a bad thing, but they would be crazy because half the time these updates that get voices are atrocious. So yeah,
not all games need voice acting. We've covered a handful of games on this show that probably would have been better off if there weren't voice actors in there fucking things up.
Yeah, it's like, hey, we need voice acting because that's the sign of the times, yet we don't
the
have
village
money
is
for voice
under
actors.
Attack.
Yeah. Could you get your cousin Sal to come in bring your relative to work day and just have him read the script? Oh, no problem, bro.
I am a magical elf from the fairy lands of of Hasmogadoff.
Tangredor? That's Tangdor. When you went at, you know,
stop yelling at me.
But thankfully, this game is voiceless.
I have a skin rash.
That would probably be interesting for gameplay mechanics. Whoa! You got to get back to base for ointment. You can't stay out for too long. You'll be out there scratching and rolling in the dirt.
That's how Dead Rising 5 is going to start.
Skin rash.
So anyway, Locke's Quest.
Felled by a rash. I've covered wars, you know. Jesus. I've done better than this. But Locke's Quest is essentially, like you described, it is a tower defense style game. And it's interesting that you tell me that you mentioned in your description 75 days because it kind of makes a bit of sense as how the game itself plays out, because what it does is it goes through scenarios of the plot. So you'll experience an event, and once the event is over and you get to the final, you get to the point where you're actually doing gameplay, it'll say day one, like as you start the game. Day one will be, okay, here's your objective. Here's what you have. Here are the new enemy types, if any. Here are the new items that you unlocked, if any. Go nuts. And you have to use resources that you get. They start you with a bulk of it, and then you get more from defeating units. And you have to actually build defense units like turrets or... You think turrets, they'll be like, was it slowdown turrets or like firing turrets, for example, because some of them are utilities, not just always meant for attack. There are ground traps like explosive mines. You can get like little bot things that can help bolster defenses. It's a pretty cool game in that regard. You set these up using the resource count, and then when the game starts, you have a certain period of time that you have to survive a certain amount of time you have to survive a wave of clockwork robots. So I'm not 100% sure if they somehow have an amount that they plan for you, an event that you're somehow able to beat them quickly. But I just know that when the clock stops, all the clockwork robots that are on the screen will stop functioning, you know, sort of like they ran out of power.
Yeah.
And that day will be over. Then you'll get another story scenario, and then you'll get another – the next day will kick in. And depending on – if you're on the same map, you'll start with whatever didn't get destroyed on the previous day plus whatever resources you acquired during the previous day. And it's like, okay, resume bolstering your defenses. So the first time I played the game, I tried to – I did like the first couple maps, and I tried to spread my defenses out way too much. Like I would put – so a wall and some turrets on one entry point, wall and some turrets on another entry point, and I got the crap kicked out of me because robots do not screw around. This game is not the kind of tower defense game where your devices and parts can take care of themselves. Locke has to get knee deep into the fray by doing both attacks against his opponents as well as repair work on the defense unit types. So if a robot starts attacking a defense point, you can go into like a little mini game by walking up to the turret or the wall and press Y. And by doing that mini game, you can basically heal the part and keep it from breaking. And in addition to that, you can also get knee deep into the fray and start punching robots in the face with your wrench or fist, whatever the heck he's using, because I never really got clarification on this. Just he just starts punching things. So he's beating robots up. And what happens is you can do normal attacks or you can do like a combo type attack where the game will give you a series of button inputs to set up. And if you input that series of attack buttons in a sequence, you'll do additional damage to the robot and dismantle it. But if you screw it up, you just lose your out. You just don't do any damage at all that round. And you just kind of borked it. So you got to be real careful. And yet at the same time, you kind of have no choice but to do the combo attacks because he's a wuss otherwise. Need that shit to get things done. It, to me, was a pretty fun game. Once I realized what I was supposed to be doing, I started getting a lot better at it. But I think as far as this game goes, each map has a bit of a learning curve to it because I was legitimately bad at every new map I started, which is rare for me. I mean, don't get me wrong. I guess I'm not typically a tower defense kind of guy. Like, I don't get to play a ton of them. So I can't be like, I'm so good at them, and this one I just failed. So your models may vary on your skill level. But I was able to get the hang of it as I progressed through the game and get better as I went. So there is definitely a means to get better. It's not just an impossible product to play. And I genuinely like the game. The graphics are nice.
I dig the visuals. I like that they kept the pixel style of the original game, but like all the voice, not the voiceovers, but like all the text stuff and the character portraits are all like HD hand-drawn stuff.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I liked it very much. It was a nice fit to put in the game, and it made me, you know, appreciate the upscaling. So if you're not the type that needs to have your games on the go, and not to mention, I'm not even sure how easy it is to find a copy of the DS Locke's Quest, I would say this version is good. And there's a defense mode, which I didn't even bother with, but I'm guessing that it is like probably an infinite tower defense, and you just see how long you can last before you fail. That's the vibe I would get from something called defense mode in a game like this. But I didn't even bother with it. I was too concerned with just playing through the story.
Was it that Antonia defense?
Antonia defense.
Is that what you're talking about?
No, it was just a mode that said defense mode. And I was like, I'll get around to that eventually. And I never did because I was like, well, I'm just
I know the features list says place Kingdom Force units to defend your capital in a brand new endless mode, Antonia defense. So I'm
that's probably what it is. That might be it then, because it just says defense mode, but that's what I'm banking on it being. You're just constantly bolstering until you fail. So endless mode. So, but I mean, let's be honest here. If you like the main gameplay style, why wouldn't you like endless mode? It's just, okay. Wouldn't it be nice if I could just keep going and see how long I could last? Well, what do you know, bro? We gave you that. So there you go. So I think the game is definitely a solid go, though. $20 for a game that originally released at $35 that got an upscaling and an additional mode. And unlike a lot of people, they'll say, but the game is old. Why should I pay this much for it still? Well, the answer is that the game is still legit for what it is, and they gave it a bit of a polish. So I don't think that's a bad price at all.
And I have to commend THQ Nordic, I guess more accurately Nordic Games, who bought the THQ license and the game, Lox Quest, the property, give them props for giving this game a second lease on life, because it kind of slipped under the radar there when THQ Prime, I guess, the original THQ, released it. And it's cool to see games like this get a second shot.
Yeah, I only hope people take the step and go ahead and buy it, because to my understanding, I thought the tower defense style of gameplay has gotten pretty popular over the years. So I want to say that this is right in the wheelhouse for a lot of people if they just give it a chance.
Nice. Well, since we are talking about some old style games, I have a game to talk about that you might be interested in called A Whole New World, developed by Mad Gear Games, published by Dolores Entertainment, releases May 9th, so this upcoming Friday, on Xbox One for $9.99. It is already available on Steam, and a PS4 release is planned for later on this summer as well.
Do they have an Aladdin expansion?
Oh, God, I wish. That'd be amazing. The city is being invaded by monsters from the upside-down world. You, the Potion Master, must defeat evil all alone with no tutorials or easy mode to assist you. You'll have to rely on the help of Faye, your companion fairy, and your potions. This is a mix of, like, Castlevania and Mega Man.
That is a good-sounding mix to me.
This is an NES-style game, and by NES-style game, I mean that this game is technically playable on a Nintendo. And I'll get to that in a little bit. But looks, visuals, and sound are straight out of the NES. The story is that a world has been split into a good and an evil world. The good is on the top side of the world. The evil is on the underside, the upside down world, I guess. And the upside down world is trying to invade the good world, and it is up to you to save the day. The crazy mechanic with this game is there are pits in the ground. And normally in most video games, you fall in the pit and you die, right?
Yeah, sounds about right.
Nope, this one you go to the upside down world, and that means
play upside down.
Yes,
that's boss.
It is very disorienting, very hard to get into, but that's kind of the point of this. It's to take you out of your comfort zone. That hey, this isn't just another 2D platformer action game. This is a new take on it, where the world literally gets flipped upside down, and each area has its own set of monsters, its own puzzles to solve, and areas to conquer. It's a really unique premise, and this is one of those games where, like, casual gamers probably shouldn't, like, pay too much attention, because this is a game that's going to kick your ass.
Unless these casual gamers want to step it up a notch and bring it on,
like I think, welcome you. I think a lot of people are going to see games like Shantae and Shovel Knight and be like, "Oh, well, a whole new world looks very similar to it. It has the same kind of visual style. Even like the chapter or the file select screen feels straight out of Shovel Knight with how everything is laid out." And the game, it is not going to hold your hand. When it starts off, they kind of ease you in with enemies that aren't going to go nuts on you, or they sprinkle a bunch of one-ups around that you can get. Yes, there are lives in this game.
Remember those?
And there are lives, there's game over screens, there's continues.
So you can run out of continues.
I actually don't know. I haven't run out of continues yet. Although I have hit the game over screen before. So when you continue, you basically, I think it just restarted me at my last checkpoint with two lives. But it's, you know, when you die, your fairy companion just revives you where you are.
Okay, so at least you don't have to go back to any checkpoints or anything.
So, but when you hit the game, I'm guessing when the game over hits, you go back to the checkpoint. But while you're still playing, if you run out of health, the fairy just revives you where you are. Except for boss battles, she'll pull you out of the boss battle and you start from the most recent checkpoint, which is pretty much right before the boss battle. Boss battles in this game are crazy, insane, difficult. you know, all
they
the
make
bosses
you utilize both sides of the world, or basically
sometimes, yes, there was a fire and ice battle that you very deliberately had to jump from the upside down world to the right side up world, because the enemy would shoot out like almost bullet hell style amounts of projectiles, and you had to position yourself well enough that they wouldn't hit you. It was.
You're making me want to buy this game, and it's not even out yet.
Dude, it is crazy, and the difficulty actually leads into a promotion that they're doing, or at least they were. As far as I know, it's still going on. I'm not sure if they have like separate competitions for Steam and then Xbox and then PS4 when that one releases, but they are doing a promotion where if you send in a picture that you have completed all the achievements in the game, and yes, there's stuff like beat the game without killing any enemies, or beat the game killing every enemy, stuff like that, you'll get a copy of the game on the NES.
That sounds really awesome, and I don't know if I'll have this channel, if I have the skills to do that, because I'm terrible at beating games without killing any enemies. Passive is my ass. But the idea of a trying sounds up my alley, especially if no one else can pull it off and I'm the first. So.
I will say it will not be easy to do, although I'm sure a couple of psychos out there are going to take care of it. And I'm just impressed by the fact that they made this game. You know, that it looks good enough on current gen consoles, but it's still at its core an actual legitimate NES game.
And when Joe says that, it definitely makes a valid point, because like you could take something like, for example, Mega Man 9 or 10, which have the Mega Man or the NES Mega Man look, but they are not technically capable of running on an NES because they do things that require the power of a more advanced system to run.
Yeah. So, I mean, I believe the NES cart version that they're giving is a simplified version of it. I'm sure that the version that we have on Xbox One and on Steam eliminates some of the graphical glitches that you might see, like the flickering, sprite flickering, stuff like that. I know the console version also has a super NES style soundtrack to go with it instead of just the NES, so you could switch between the two.
That's another cool perk then.
Yeah, and then you mentioned Mega Man, and I mentioned Mega Man elements earlier. When you defeat bosses in the game, you start off with a potion that you just chuck at enemies. When you kill bosses, you get new potions based on the power gem that they have, like a lightning potion that you throw on the ground and a column of lightning just shoots up in the air. So if a wave of enemies are coming at you, you chuck that on the ground, they just run into a fucking lightning barrier, pretty much.
So you can choose from stages when you start the game. It's like, I want to go to this stage instead of that stage.
No, it is linear. There's five stages, and you go through them in order. But they're significantly longer stages than you would find in, like, a Mega Man game or something. It's not a stage that you're going to blaze through in 5 minutes.
Okay,
they are like full-fledged world-style stages, so there's plenty of content in the game. It's hard as a motherfucker, but it's a lot of fun, and I like the fact that I'm being challenged by this game. I like the fact that there's a game that is using lives again and continues. The whole upside down mechanic is going to throw people off a lot, but it's once you finally get the hang of things, it's a really satisfying game to play.
Yourself on gravity, man, before you get the game.
The only thing holding this from giving it an all out buy it rating is the fact that casual gamers are not going to have as much fun with this. Like, this is very much a game geared towards a hardcore old school gamers, and that's not a bad thing. The world needs more games like that, but I very, very highly recommended try it if you are a fan of classic NES style games, and maybe you could win yourself an NES copy of the game.
Good luck. You can pull that off, man, especially if you're a collector type. You're going to have something in your collection that will not be easily replicated by someone else.
Shit is crazy.
And I like the idea about that, because that's become a weird trend lately, where I'm seeing like a lot of companies, like, well, I won't say a lot of companies, but more people are releasing new games for old systems, like brand new games. And I adore that.
Yeah. There's like new Super Nintendo and like Genesis games coming out recently. Dreamcast is still getting new games.
Yeah, it's, that Breakers cool game, to see. Right? Yeah, I am a fan. Like, legitimately.
Anyway, final game to talk about tonight is called Thea: The Awakening. This one is developed and published by Muha Games. This one released May 31st on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $17.99. Thea: The Awakening is a turn-based strategic survival game inspired by the Slavic mythology and set in a procedural dark fantasy world infused with non-linear story and unique combat system. That seems like a whole lot of buzzwords. So,
what I'm going to say flat the heck out, and this is not a knock on the game, this is actually a plus for the game. I barely scratched the surface of this thing. I barely scratched the surface of it. There's a lot going on in this freaking game.
Yeah, this looks like a very deep and involved game. So tell me all about it.
Okay, so basically the idea is that you're in a world where, you know, without going into all the lore and the crazy names and shit, world went to crap, the light died out, God said, fuck you, and everybody ran. Humans were getting beat to hell by Monster Town USA, and then one day, the gods came back, one of those being you. And it is up to you to assist the remaining humans with getting their shit back in order and expanding the world and reviving it. So, you start out by choosing a god. And each of the gods, you only start out with two, but you can unlock more. But each god has different perks that affect how your civilization grows. Like, one might have more growth in intellectual skills, and one might have more growth in combat or, I don't know, like, crafting skills. So things of that nature. And you want to choose one of those to determine, you know, how you grow as an augmentation. And then from there, when you start the game, they plop you down in like a base town with a single team of expeditionaries. So it's all about six people and some children. And they craft you with going out in the world. But thankfully, they give you a pretty decent tutorial that might take you a minute, like a try or two, to really settle into, unless you're really the type of guy that can sit there and go, okay, I'm focused, I'm concentrating. But if you're not, it might take you two goes of the tutorial to go, okay, now I know what the hell's going on. So, but without going into how the tutorial itself works, I'm just going to try to explain how the game, the mechanics go for the game. So you have a town that functions kind of like how, let me think, I won't say quite SimCity, but how, I don't even know what fucking game it sounds like. So what I'm going to say, oh, here it is. It functions like a game where you start out with like a very base style of game. You know, you need to have food to feed your army. You need to have fuel to power your army, like as far as like the functionality of it. And you need to craft supplies such as armor and swords and things of that nature. You need to create buildings that provide functionality and allow your civilization to grow. You have to pretty much do the full goddamn Monty in this game. So
yeah, this looks like a very complex and complicated game.
It is. It's legitimately is. So when you start out the game, you have, like I said, you have like four people that stay in your town from the jump, and three people that already formed an expedition party that are sitting out in the world. You can send the expedition parties out, because you can have more than one eventually. You send expedition parties out to explore the hexes on the map, which has a fog of war until you branch out further and expand the map. But as you go, you come across other monsters on the map or different encounters on the map or places that you can like explore to see if something happens. And there's even dungeons on the map. So let's say you come across, you come across a goblin and his goblin friends. The game will go into like a little story, a little descriptive complete with narration, which I'm not going to lie, it's actually kind of charming. It's a male that sounds like a dwarf who voices everything, man or woman. It's like, I'm a witch, says the witch. And she's like, hey, give me all your money, you son of a bitch. And it's like that. And he does a pretty good voiceover for it. It's like I said, it's charming. So when this happens, the game will typically give you a set of options that you can choose, and you can try to work through each scenario. And depending on how you work through it, you can either just like be handed something, or you might enter combat. Combat is weird in this game because it's not just combat. It is also, they call them challenges. So the way, what I guess first thing I'll do is I'll describe how the actual combat works, and I'll step into challenges. So when you go into combat, all the people in your expedition party are represented by cards, and they get an attack stat and a defense stat. When a defense stat gets knocked down to zero by the opposition, that character is dead, like dead, and they do not come back. But you have two stacks of cards in addition. So one stack is the attack stack, and that's the one where the attack and defense comes into play. Then there is the tactical stack, and these cards have buffs or abilities that are meant to bolster the attackers or hinder the opposition. And the opposition has the same layout of their cards. They have a tactical stack and an attack stack of cards. Now, when you play the game, you have to lay down a card, like one of your attack cards, on the board. And then you can use any of your tactical cards to augment the boost of an attack card. Enemy can do the same thing. And when the thing starts off, it reads from left to right on the card order, and you basically attack the card that's closest to you to do damage. And it's weird to explain, to the point where even the game says you need to pay attention to this tutorial because combat is complicated in this game. Like, they outright tell you that. But at the end of it, it has like two fight phases after the preparation phases. And if you don't win them, you get to go into it again until it's all said and done. And when you win, the combat's over. Now, remember how I said there are also challenges?
Yeah.
Basically, the way challenges work is the same style of gameplay, but there are, instead of using your attack stat for your, you know, for the damage you do, quote unquote, it uses your other skills. So let's say you want to negotiate with a person. Instead of having attack power, it has negotiation power, and it's based on the character's speech stat, not their power stat. And unlike with combat, your people can't die if you fail these challenges. You'll just have a different outcome. Like, if you fail a speech scenario, you might not be able to convince the guy to do a thing and something else will occur. Or you will convince them and you'll win and succeed. So you'll go through the speech. And also the side effects, the bonuses, also change based on the type of combat. So if it's a speech thing, if the character has a special skill that's related to speech combat or speech challenges, that'll be an ability that shows up on the roster instead of the combat ones. So there are a number of these things. It's pretty weird to sit there and see yourself like with a cleric that has like a 12 next to their sword, and you're all confused. Like, why the hell does he have a 12 on his attack? Oh, because that's his speech stat. Now I'm okay. I feel a little more confident now. He's negotiating with a rat. Whatever. When in Rome. So, but basically, that's pretty much the main flow of the game. And you need to cook food and craft armor so that you can, A, bolster your defenses and stats to make it easier for you to progress through the gameplay, accessories for the exact same purpose. You also need to create food in order to fuel your people, because if you do not have enough food, you will literally die from starvation.
I will say you make it sound significantly easier than it looks.
It's not. I mean, actually, pretty much how it helps in that case, then, because I think the game, once you sit and try to get used to it, it will become a flow. And once it becomes a flow, it won't bug you so much. But I agree. From the out the start, this game is fucking complicated. I still don't understand everything that's taking place in this game.
Does the game at least have a decent tutorial to start you off with?
I think so. What happens is you start off, and I told you, remember how you have four people at town and three people as an expedition party?
Yeah.
The game will pretty much tell you, go to this location on the map. Use these buttons to do these things. So it initially tells you how to traverse the map and explore it. Then you go to the location. There's a monster there who's like, hi, how are you? I'm Theodore, and I'm this really ugly-ass bastard, but I want to talk to you, the gamer, with a challenge. Play my game, or whatever. And then he basically gives you, like, he explains and gives you quests that are meant to teach you how the game works. Like, okay, today I'm going to teach you how to go into combat. Go fight these four boars that I put on the map. I marked them for you, and then you'll go to there on the map, and you'll go through the dialogue, and the game will start to explain, this is how combat works. Do this, and this, and this. And then when you're done the combat, you'll get the item, take it back to theater. You'll go, thanks for the reward. Oh, thanks for bringing me what I asked you for. Now that you seem to understand, do you understand combat now? Because if you do, I can move on to the next thing. He'll just kind of walk you through all the different stuff, and you'll just start to kind of gradually pick it up. And then some stuff you might have to just kind of pick up on your own as you go. But for the most part, he gives you information on the primary aspects of how the game works. So you won't be playing it blind.
Well, that's good to hear that at least has a solid tutorial to help you get through it. I want to say that the stats on some of this stuff look crazy, like over 100 different enemies in the game with procedural stats. So each creature, even in a swarm of spiders, has its own skills and stats. Over 200 nonlinear story events, over 4,400 items that you can craft, multiple endings.
Christ.
That's game sounds crazy. It sounds like if you could wrap your brain around everything this game has to offer, it's going to eat your life.
It's immense. And I actually went and read some, like, I think, was this on Steam or something at 1.2?
Yeah.
Because I went and looked at some, like, general reviews that people were saying, and then one guy was like, this game has eaten my life. I stayed up for, like, 12 hours playing this game the other day.
So we got to get to the main question here. For $17.99, what's your verdict on this one?
If you can handle games that involve resource management and high potential for failure, because you will probably fuck up sometimes, I would buy it. This is a huge game for $17.99. And I will say the only thing that bugs me, but this is a normal thing this day and day. I think I mentioned it on the previous episode I was on. It's like, this is one of those games where all the music is like, we got to make the music fit the age that it takes place in. What does that mean? Sleepy minstrel shit. You might fall asleep without caffeine. Even though the game is good, I have a penchant for being knocked out by sleepy music in games. It's just how I am. I can't help it. I'm lethargic. I play games by burning the flame on the other end when I shouldn't be. So it is very likely I could fall asleep on a game I think is awesome. But that's because of the music. It's good music, but it is sleepy music. But the game in general is awesome. You just got to come in ready to learn, be able to accept that you are going to fuck up a few times before you get the overall gist of it, and just be ready to play. And also, you get children in inventory, which is just freaking fun. Children, it just says child, and it's like, these children will grow up someday.
He's in my pocket.
Kid in my pocket. But as the time progresses, they actually grow up, and then they become people that can help out in town, too. It's pretty weird, but cool like that, too.
I might have to grab this one. If I could ever find the time for it, I might have to grab it.
But, that's the challenge for sure. Like, I've kind of wondered, you think about it, like how we do these shows, and it's like, okay, we look at this game. It's like, well, this is me with a busy life and also a love of games trying to get this in for review. Can you imagine doing this for a living? It's like, okay, due to the fact that you're doing this for a living, you got to put 40 hours into this game in 4 days because we got a review coming up. It's like, fuck you. But like, the game itself is awesome, but I could just picture so much burnout if you had to blow through it just for the review like that. This game needs to simmer. This is the kind of game that needs to simmer.
Now I can see why this game was sent to us as early as it was, to make sure that you had plenty of time with it. But yep. We are going to wrap this up for now. Pernell, thank you so much for coming on and joining as usual. It is always good having you on the show. Stick around. We're going to play a quick song, and then we are going to be on with Sergio, the developer of the game Gore Script, and Nikos from Amuse Sloth, the publisher of the game. That's a really fun chat. That should be something that you stick around for. Pernell, do you have any final words to wrap this up?
I don't know, but I do realize that I'm going to start taking – I got to buy a notebook for these reviews just to jot down random shit going forward, because these games are starting to become crazy in depth. I'm like, shoot, I'm trying to remember all this, but you really just can't. It's just so wild. But that's just me rambling and having fun. Just keep playing fun games, people, and enjoy the show, because we like doing it and we hope you like listening to it.
I mean, it's okay, I guess.
Oh, hush your fuss. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the show. We are joined by two fantastic guests right now. I am going to butcher your last names, but Sergio, Nikos, welcome to the show. Introduce yourselves so that we can hear how your names are really pronounced without me destroying it.
Hi. Thank you for having us. I guess I'll start. My name is Sergio Bucur. That's not the Romanian pronunciation of it, but it's as good as you'll get in English. So that's decent enough.
What is like the true pronunciation? If there's like a more complicated version,
it's Sergio Bucur.
Nice, always good. But you're the easy name here because Nikos. I want to, first off, welcome to the show. Secondly, congratulations for having the most incredible name I've ever seen in my inbox. Please introduce yourself to our listeners.
Nice to be here on your show, John. My name is Nikos Hadzigeorgiadis.
I could listen to that last name forever. It is.
Even if I say it and you see it written, it's still not going to make sense. I'm going to repeat it one more time. Nikos Hadzigeorgiadis. And glad to be here on your show.
And I'm staring at your name in one of my emails and nothing. It just, part of me thinks you're lying because I'm foreign and I'm easy to fool. But welcome to the show. You guys are here to talk about the game Gore Script. CJ talked about the game on the show last week, I believe.
Something like that. I think it was last Thursday.
So, for the people who don't know what Gore Script is, why don't you guys give us the sales pitch? Give us the rundown of what this game is.
Gore Script is, we wanted to be like this old school shooter that's actually an old school shooter. So not, it's not just marketed as an old school shooter. It's the real thing. So, you know, it's like Doom, it's like Quake, that kind of game.
That makes sense. Yeah, I was definitely feeling it when I was talking about it in my preview. I mean, everything's true to Doom, including even down to the picking up keys and actually having to go through colored doors. Like, this game felt so much like Doom.
We're glad to hear it, and we were glad that when we heard your short review last week on your podcast. Definitely.
You guys have done an amazing job of actually keeping it true. I had a couple of questions that are kind of just random and don't really seem like they fit in any sort of order, so I'll just ask them. Leaderboards. I noticed that that there were people that were a much higher score than me. Are all the leaderboards like organized by the difficulty that they played, or is it like any people that play at a higher difficulty are still on the same leaderboard?
Okay, so there's just one single leaderboard for the entire game, and your score in that leaderboard is your cumulative score per the current save slot you're in. So let's say, for example, you start the game on normal and you don't pick blackout or permadeath, you'll get you won't get any kind of multiplier. You just get a 1x multiplier, and as you progress through the levels, your score is going to get, you know, bigger and bigger. But the score only tracks the secrets you found and the time you spent to finish a level. So every second below 3 minutes for finishing a level counts towards the score.
Oh, wow. So getting kills in the level does not matter?
Not at all.
Okay, that explains some stuff then. That I was wondering, because I think I'd mentioned in the preview that like I was getting a really good score just for finishing the level extremely quickly and not killing anybody compared to killing people in the level. And yeah. I find that interesting. Is there any reason you chose not to have kills count towards the score?
Well, the score system is meant to reward two kinds of gameplay. So first off, we want to reward the speedrunners. So let's say you play the game initially, you go through all the levels, you finish the campaign. But then you can replay levels at any time. So you can improve your personal best time for a level whenever you want. So let's say you finish the you finish level 2 in 5 minutes the first time. You can then replay it and just aim for a much much lower time. And the other part was to reward completionists. So that's why, in order to have the maximum score possible is 1 million. In order to do that, you have to finish the game on the biggest difficulty with both blackout and permadeath activated, and you have to get all of the secrets. There are 53 in total, and finish each level below 1 minute, which, as you can imagine, is pretty difficult.
Oh, geez.
And you had to combine finding all the secrets with the time? Or is it like you can play... Okay, so you can play through the level, get all the secrets, and then play through the level again and speedrun it?
Exactly.
Okay, cool. That's at least a little bit easier. I couldn't imagine trying to get every secret and complete the level in under a minute.
There's people out there who would be able to do that. We all know that.
Oh, yeah. We were greatly surprised to see especially one guy do some great speedruns from even the pre-alpha version. This guy is amazing. We don't even know him yet. Yeah.
So you mentioned pre-alpha. How long has the game been in development?
The game has been in development since October of last year, October of 2016. The pre-alpha was basically until and during green light, so that was March. Then we had an alpha period from March up until, I think, a few weeks ago. Then we entered the beta, and yesterday we signed off the first release build. So the game is actually done. It's just, we're working on the trailer now. And
that is an insane turnaround on a game. Most people we talk to on the show were like, how long has the game been in development? Well, it started off as a student project when I was 18 in the mid-90s. Most people that we talk to, they'll say that they've been working on the game for 2, 3, 4 years, and this one's, less than a year. That's pretty crazy. I'm impressed.
Yeah, allow me here to do a parenthesis. I haven't really worked on the game. All the game is Sergio's work. We from Amused Sloth, we're just helping him a bit with the marketing and the publishing stuff, assistance. He's done everything himself, including the damn game engine.
Wow.
In this month.
So, Sergio, yeah. You are insane. I think we could all agree on that. You are insane. I can't believe how quickly you've done this by yourself, pretty much.
Yeah, you must have had to work many hours every day to get this game done.
Overall, I think I worked a normal 8-hour, 40-hour week, 8 hours per day, 40-hour week, but... there were weeks where I just, I worked 12 hours a day, but there were also other weeks in which I slacked off a bit. So in the end, it was like...
evening it out.
Yeah, evening it out, exactly.
That makes sense, but damn, that's also still a lot of time.
Also, to be completely honest, the game, the current game, is actually a continuation of a previous title, which I built 3 years ago as a JavaScript game. That one took 5 months to develop. So this current game, some of the monsters and also the engine, I ported from JavaScript. So you can add 5 months to, to this.
Okay.
8 months or something.
Oh, yeah. So you're just about at a year. Oh, that changes it so much. Evans, that is incredibly impressive. That you've done this entire game in about a year when you factor in the previous release.
Yep.
Damn.
And all by yourself. Jeez. Did you have any help at all working on this game?
Not in terms of development. So, of course, my friends and colleagues from Amuse Sloth helped me on marketing and all sorts of other stuff, non-development related. I contracted someone to do the soundtrack, but in terms of development and art, if you can call it art, whatever. that's all done by myself.
Well, I think that the game does have pretty good visuals. I love the weapon design. So I think I'd consider it art.
Well, it's programmer art. Basically, the game is, you know, if you look at it from a development standpoint, and you know, you don't just look at it from a player standpoint. It's if you can you make a game of a full fledged shooter using just programmer art? And well, apparently you can. So yeah.
Out of curiosity, there are 18 levels in this game.
Yes.
Was there any thoughts on possibly creating a builder for other people to make levels and put them on like the Steam Workshop or something?
Yes. That's actually part of our plan. We want to release the level editor, which we've been using. I've been using myself to make all the levels. We want to release that as a free DLC. Sometime after launch, but a few weeks or a month, basically, after launch.
Okay, that's awesome, because I was thinking that would be a great way to like keep the longevity of this game up, keep people wanting to play more if there's more levels to go after. If they topped out their score and they can't get any better.
So, Nikos, is that something that you guys at Amuse Sloth have been asking? Because it seems like when CJ asked the question, you're like,
well... Many of the things that happened through these last few months, it's a constant struggle to try to convince a programmer to do some stuff and that they will matter and the people will love them. And the level editor was one of those. We had a lot of discussions, let's call them politely, about if people are going to want to see a level editor in the game. You remember, Sergio?
Yeah.
And then I'd come out here bringing the question immediately.
Yeah.
So speaking of suggestions to try and convince you to do things, is controller support something that you are looking into?
Not at the moment.
Son of a bitch.
Just because there's actually a good reason for it, because you would... So let's say we actually put controller support in. You would hate yourself playing this game with controller support. For a lot of people, it's already hard as it is. If you try to play it with a controller, it's going to be brutal.
Yeah, I can imagine because you're moving at a pretty fast speed whilst trying to move your camera and shoot.
See, I already hate myself trying to play it with a mouse and keyboard because I cannot do mouse and keyboard. Like
could let him hate himself anyway.
My brain does not function properly trying to manipulate a mouse and a keyboard for a game, and I can't do it. I'm terrible.
That's exactly how I feel about controllers. So you mentioned how you started gaming. Myself, I've been a PC gamer since forever. I've never owned a console. I've never played on a console. I've always played on a mouse and keyboard. So even the concept of having controller support is so alien to me. It's like, okay, I can do it from a developer standpoint, but I'm not sure, you know... how to make it feel good for the player, because I don't know their mindset.
That's true, and with being a one-man team, you don't really have the option of finding or having somebody else do it for you.
And Nikos, is that something that you guys at Amuse Sloth might be able to look into doing to either help with implementing controller support or finding someone who would be able to help? Because then that would lead to another question I had, whether or not there's any chance that we could see this game on consoles.
Well, we're waiting for the launch day, and depending on how the launch goes and afterwards, then we're going to consider all kinds of options. We have not specifically, neither us nor Sergio, not anybody, excluded the possibility of anything. It will just depend on how the game goes. I guess that's how everybody does things.
You get that question a lot with interviews asking if it'll come to console. It really does depend on if the game sells well enough on PC. Speaking of selling and launch, I had a question that I thought of pretty much immediately playing this game. Are you at all nervous that the game won't sell well due to another recent old school FPS called Strafe? Are you thinking that that would kind of take away any of the momentum this game has?
Not really, because I've played that game. No, it's okay, I'm joking. It happened that there were a lot of old school FPS games recently, like a few notable ones, but we're going on the opposite direction, having the levels are handcrafted. We excluded everything procedurally generated from the beginning. We all felt that there is a turn, a trend turn towards handcrafted. People got bored for procedurally generated. This might be my opinion only, but that's my opinion. That's how I see things.
No, I can definitely see both sides to the coin there. I know a lot of people appreciate procedural generation just because, ooh, it's a new game every time. But no matter how many procedurally generated stages you play, nothing will ever have the same feel as something that was deliberately made to challenge a player.
Yeah, not to mention with procedural generation, you could always have those cases where there's a room that gets put in that's completely screws the player because they have no chance, whereas if you handcraft it, it's like everything is designed so that you can eventually get through it based on what you have at the time. Like, obviously, at the beginning, you only have shotgun. And
yeah, I believe there are ways to solve dead ends that would be created with procedurally generated stuff, but when we got on board with Sergio, we found a really old school game that felt like, to all of us that played, like the original Doom 1 and Doom 2 and Quake and these kind of games. So we tried to see what is the best option to do based on that. So procedurally generated levels, for example, was not something that would get us more close to our goal, to have a really true old school game.
Well, that makes sense. So you mentioned that Doom gave a lot of inspiration. Were there other games as well that really inspired this game? Like any sort of weapons that were similar to other games or enemies?
Well, not necessarily something specific from those games, but the feeling of those games. I would say the main influences for Gorescript were Doom, so the original 1993 version of Doom, also Super Meat Boy, and Hotline Miami.
All right, that makes sense.
That's a nice list of games.
I can definitely see the Super Meat Boy just from the amount of gore. There's a lot of gore in this game, which, I mean, I suppose suits it considering it's called Gorescript. But I love the way the walls just get painted in their blood when you shoot them. There's something great about it. It almost looks like what is that game? Splatoon, except it's murdering.
Instead of Squid Ink, it's Monster Entrails.
Well, it's all pixelated, so it's PG-13.
Oh yeah, obviously.
So you mentioned, I want to go back a little bit when CJ was talking about the difficulty and stuff like that. You talked about permadeath and blackout modes. I know what permadeath is. I'm sure most people do. But what is blackout mode?
Could you?
Blackout mode is all the lights in the game are off. And I mean the lights in the levels. So you play the same campaign, but the only way to see something is, first off, every object in the game, so like the monsters and the power-ups and explosive barrels and that sort of stuff. They have a glow to them. They have a part of them which is which glows in the dark. So that's part of every entity in the game. And also, when a monster shoots something at you or you shoot your weapon, there's a small muzzle flash, you know? So it's pitch black, but you have to keep shooting and keep engaging enemies to actually see something. So it gives this different kind of feel to the game.
So you really hate the players, don't you?
Well, we do have a mode that's called masochistic, so yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah, it's kind of insane. But it's also really fun, so I mean, whatever. I'll take the insanity. If it means I can have a good time and kill a bunch of weird alien things.
True.
What are these things?
They're abstract. They're completely abstract. I mean, a lot of people, when they make videos about GoreScript on YouTube, they go for this Illuminati theme, which I didn't plan at all. So, like, there's actually no Illuminati in this game, but you know, since people see eyes on triangles, they immediately think, okay, this is like Illuminati. They're actually just triangles with eyes, guys. they're nothing more than that.
That's what all people in the Illuminati say.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. So what kind of conspiracies are you involved with?
Nikos? We have a similar rule with the Fight Club. First rule is not to talk about it. Yeah.
Technically, by even mentioning it, you're now in trouble.
No, it's okay. It's okay, because no code names were mentioned. So
I don't know. Amused Sloth sounds like a code name to me. Something sinister is behind that.
Yeah, we like to think great games are behind that, and even if it's part of a conspiracy, we're okay with that.
Which, by the way, I love the company name Amuse Sloth.
Thank you.
You guys are just nailing it with names across all platforms, whether they're birth names or company names. You guys are just nailing it.
Yeah, there were some funny incidents in the past about names of games and how many hours it took in order to reach a name. Yeah, it's like hell sometimes. But if the name in the end is good and people like it, it's okay.
And I think people like this name. It's definitely memorable because it's different.
GoreScript.
Yeah, so, anyway. Definitely hope so.
So, Nikos, how did Amuse Sloth get involved with GoreScript? It looks like most of the games that you guys have worked with in the past have been iOS or Google Play games. Is this your first Steam title?
Actually, it is our second Steam title. The other one, last year, we took it even completely out of mention. Another project for that would be for PC, but we decided to drop it afterwards, the development. So we have limited experience with PC games so far. GoreScript is going to be our first one released on Steam. Our publishing experience and development experience was mostly on mobile devices. Yeah, that's true.
And what led you to get involved with a Steam title like this?
We knew Sergio. So when he came and he showed us his game, we said, yeah, definitely, we like it, and we're going to help you with it.
That was it. It seems like it was a pretty simple build-up to it.
Hidden drama behind it.
Hey, awesome. Here's our game. Oh, it's cool. Do you want to release it? Sure. The end.
That's the most simple publishing deal of all time.
It also helps that we're in the same city and knew each other before this.
Okay, so, yeah, that would really help.
Yeah, definitely.
So where are you guys located, anyway?
We're located in Cluj-Napoca. It's on the northwestern part of Romania. It's the place that the rest of the world knows as Transylvania.
Ah, so you're vampires. All right. That's how Sergiu's able to get all that work done. He just stays up all night coding because he's a vampire.
Yeah, I'm guessing he might be 175 years old by now as well. And he says only 5 months of development, but yeah, whatever.
The game's been in the works since the late 1800s. The secret is out.
Illuminati.
It's okay. I've seen him also on daylight, so it's okay.
Ooh. What was the decision to, like... I just find it interesting that the jumping isn't, like, an automatic mechanic, and instead you have to find a pair of boots in order to jump in the game. What was the decision leading to that?
Well, the decision is... If you start from the design of Doom, basically, so Doom doesn't have jumping. All of its levels, they don't have jumping as a mechanic in them. So that prompts you to do a different kind of design than a level design than Quake does. But midway through development, we thought, okay, let's try to put some kind of jumping in. So that's why we also have this option, and it kind of works good because it's something you work up to. Like it's an artifact you have to find. It's gonna be spawned randomly per save slot, so it might be, you know, it might be in the first level, it might be in the fifth. You just have to look out for secrets, and you're gonna find the boots eventually. They're guaranteed to drop at some point.
I guess I got pretty lucky. I found it in the second level.
Yeah, that's good. That's usually, people who find the boots early give us better reviews.
Like, hey, I can actually finish the game.
What's the latest that someone had the boots drop? That you know of, at least.
I'm not completely sure, but the problem is we're kind of, you know, struggling with this concept that you actually have to go look for secrets. So, a core design principle of the game is you can't upgrade your gear without looking for secrets. I mean, well, secrets aren't just stuff that's hidden behind a wall. Of course, there's also secrets which are in plain sight, basically. But there is usually some kind of obstacle that prevents you from getting, like a crusher, for example, or you have to do some platforming. So the problem is not that they're not spawned, but people don't, you know, they don't go for the secrets that often. So that's why they get them a lot later than they should.
I know I gave up on the rocket launcher in the first level because it was spawned behind some crushers, and I just for some reason those crushers I couldn't figure out. I kept getting crushed, and then I'd have to restart the whole level, which is actually what led me to speedrun the level because I was getting annoyed about it. So instead of I decided to drop the launcher and just go for the keys and get out of the room as quick as possible so I could finally move on. And then
go on.
And then I think that's in the second level. Is it? I think I don't want to give away the secret. Actually, never mind. I won't say what it is because it's a pretty obvious secret. But I don't want to give it away.
It's okay. It's fine.
Well, it was. I think it's the second level that you can walk behind you, and it just goes. You go right through the wall, and then you find the. I found the boots in that level. It might have been the second or third, but it was one of those two.
Oh, since you played it, we actually shifted around the levels. We now have the final level progression, so I think the level you're talking about is actually like level 13 or something now.
Oh, interesting. That leads me to the question: am I going to have to restart the game?
Basically, it depends. So the thing is, up to a point, so in our closed beta, up to a point, we didn't have any kind of migration going on for save files. So I think up until 2 weeks ago, every time we pushed an update, it just deleted all the save files. Now, of course, that's not going to happen either now or at launch. Hopefully, it's not going to happen.
Hopefully.
But yeah, if you played back then, you might find out that your saves are
actually gone. I'm going to assume it is if the level I played that was level 2 or 3 is now 14 or 13 or whatever. Yeah. I'm probably going to have to restart, but I don't mind because I'm assuming the first level is still the first level. But
No.
That's level 7.
It's level 2. There's actually... I went by a quote by John Romero when doing the first level. He said that you should do the first level, you should create the first level as your last level. The last level you develop should be the first level of the game, because by then you'd be most proficient with the level editing tools. So it actually turned out to be true, because the first level, even though it's a very introductory level, it's a very simple level. It's one of the better looking levels of the game now because of that.
Oh, okay. That's pretty smart. I didn't know that's something he said, but that's smart on him.
Sergio is like a moving John Romero and Romero and Carmack encyclopedia. So yeah.
I'm guessing that you've played all of the games that they've put out over the years.
I played all the games which they put out together. I didn't play the games John Romero put out on his own. I'm sorry, but I just didn't.
So no Daikatana for you?
Yeah, I did not want to become John Romero's bitch. I'm sorry. But
how could you pass up that offer to be John Romero's bitch?
Well, I read the book about them like twice, the Masters of Doom by Kushner. It's a really, really good read, but somehow I just didn't feel the connection to become John Romero's bitch.
It's okay. One day you'll see that offer again and you'll be like, you know what? I've grown. I've matured. I think now is the time to become John Romero's bitch.
Don't we all?
We're saying that phrase a lot.
CJ, are you not familiar with Daikatana?
Oh, I am. Sort of. I haven't played it myself, but I've definitely heard of it.
I remember in my younger years that it was something that I was hearing for many, many, many years, and then I eventually never played. Somehow.
I think you managed to be lucky with that.
Okay.
So you have not played Daikatana. What are some of the PC games that you've grown up with that you've enjoyed?
Should I go ahead? So, Nikos, do you want to start?
Yeah, you go ahead.
Well, I'm a hardcore World of Warcraft player. I've been playing World of Warcraft since 2007.
Oh, wow.
I quit recently, and hopefully that's forever. But, that's not going to last. It's like cigarettes. But besides that, I liked the Gothic series, the RPGs, Gothic 1 and 2
by
Piranha Bytes. Diablo, of course. Diablo 2.
Everybody loves Diablo 2.
Not everybody. I don't.
What?
I really don't.
How don't you like Diablo 2? I can imagine, I can understand why people are like, oh, Diablo 3 was terrible, but I don't think I've ever heard anyone say anything bad about Diablo 2.
The only Diablo I liked was Diablo 1 that had some kind of a story. The second one, I broke like 2 mice, and then I said, no, this game is not for me. I'm not an action RPG gamer anymore. Period. That's it.
How did you break the mice? Was it just something frustrating? You're like, fuck this game, and threw it at the wall?
Isn't it always like that?
Well, I mean, you could just eventually overclick it, but, nobody actually does that. Mice don't last long enough to overclick.
The first one, I think it was from the Overclick, because somehow I enjoyed way more to do every single hit by clicking once, not holding the click. So you can imagine in the other two.
Oh, yeah. I imagine that I believe I was playing that game. I was like 6 or 7 years old. So I was doing the same thing where I was just clicking.
Not anymore.
That's like when my sister would come and visit and we would play Diablo 3. I'm sorry about this, but on console, I don't mean to offend you, but every time she would attack, she would just hit the button each time instead of holding it. I'm like, you can just hold the button. You don't have to sit and press it over and over and over.
Well, yeah, but maybe you just want to feel the hit, feel the impact of the hits, like each time you actually...
Yeah. Click the mouse really, really hard for harder attacks.
Gonna click the shit out of this monster. So you recently got off World of Warcraft. How long had you been playing it? Has it been nonstop since 2007?
No, I've been playing it, sporadically. I played a bit in each expansion, but... It didn't manage to get me to play like a year nonstop or something like that. The only time I actually played for years at the time was when I was in high school and I played Burning Crusade, which was my absolute favorite expansion.
Nice. Have you dabbled in any other MMOs or was that it?
I'm not sure if this will offend anyone, but I'm kind of a purist with MMOs. I think there's just World of Warcraft, and that's it.
No, you gotta explore more. There's some good ones out there.
I enjoyed my time with Final Fantasy XI and the re-release of Final Fantasy XIV. I've enjoyed those. So,
Defiance was really good until they ruined it.
Eh, it was okay.
I was really into it for a little while there. I managed to put like 115 hours in a few weeks, and then I just they ruined it with an update, and now it's just done.
What about you, Nikos? Are you an MMO guy?
I was a WoW victim from day one of the opening of the European servers. Unfortunately, I lost the beta invite to the US servers back then on day one, but I was pretty hardcore till Burning Crusade. I played a bit Burning Crusade, but then I just quit. I played every MMO up to 2 or 3 years after WoW, like everything. But WoW ruined me. I can never pick up an MMO again after WoW.
They take too long. They MMOs are like lifetime investments.
They really are.
Yeah, it was like click, boom, 1.5 year lost of your life.
Exactly. You click that sign up button and you're signing up for us to take your life.
It's like waking up from a coma once you stop. You're like, what year is it?
Yeah, and Blizzard has always that way of hooking you up so much with their games that you don't even realize it in the beginning.
Yeah, they're insane. Like even not an MMO, people are still like insane about Overwatch and put hundreds and hundreds of hours into that.
Yeah, and imagine that it was supposedly a failed project.
I mean, that's nuts. Even Blizzard's failures end up being insane successes.
Yep. Yeah, true to that.
Makes me sad. We'll still never see StarCraft Ghost show up anywhere.
Might be for better. Or that cancelled Warcraft adventure game, point and click, that they were teasing like back in the day. That never came out.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't even know that was a thing.
I don't remember.
Yeah, they also had some teaser video or something, or some screenshots, I don't remember. But it was a thing for many years and eventually never came up.
I'll have to look that one up. Why. I don't remember hearing about that one, but I, again, that might have been because I've never been a PC guy, which is,
that's
one of the reasons I never did World of Warcraft. I tried it a handful of times, but the one thing that kept me from being able to play it was mouse and keyboard. And I just,
and rather than sticking through and trying to learn, he gave up.
I'd rather just play a game with a controller.
I mean, an MMO, it's difficult. Even on Final Fantasy XIV, A Realm Reborn, even though you can play it with a controller, it's much better to play with a keyboard and mouse because you can use many more of your abilities.
Eh, I'm a warrior, so I don't need a dozen different magics to at my fingertips. I'll just punch shit.
Well, you can play Eve. You require only a mouse. But good luck with that.
Yeah, I don't think I need to lose my life to another game.
Yeah.
I'm worried that I'm going to relapse into Final Fantasy 14 when the, what's the new expansion, Stormblood, comes out.
Mm-hmm. Lately, I'm severely hooked up with something that it's not an MMO, but it's still online, that PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds.
Oh.
Oh my god, it's so addictive.
I don't understand how anybody can enjoy those games. Please explain to me why you like getting killed and losing all your shit and having to restart every time. Please explain.
equal chance to everybody. I've never played the Battle Royale mode of Arma or H1Z1 or whatever. And I just said, okay, I'm going to try this. And that's the thing. Every time you start new, you have equal chances with everybody around you. And that's the great thing about it. And it only takes, like, I don't know, maybe 5, maybe 30 minutes, but not more than 40 minutes per round.
See, that's what bothers me. It's not like it's a game of multiplayer, and, like, even The Calling is much shorter than that. It's like those kind of games where you have to spend half an hour gathering materials and finding stuff, and you finally find something good, and then you're shot from 50 meters away, and you lose everything, and you gotta restart. I just can't enjoy those. Those frustrate me so much.
I've heard about that. Yeah.
Shut up, Mr. It's... Can't even use a keyboard. I don't want to hear it.
It's fairly tactical, so if you play good, you don't die.
Well, that was rude. I haven't played the game, though, so I can't tell. I just don't like games that are similar to it.
I'm awful. I'm an awful player. I mean, I really need a lot of training or whatever to get... I was watching this morning some stream of a guy that he was doing an average of 15 kills per round. And I was like, how the fuck does he do that? He was counterbalancing the recoil of the automatic weapon thing with his mouse. Which, like, wow. Anyway.
That's nuts. If I were to play something like that, I guarantee, like, my one or two kills per round would either be someone I'm teaming up with. I'll accidentally kill them. Or I'll just find a way to kill myself.
You'll probably just get outside of the blue wall barrier and get electrocuted to death. That'll be the end of your first 5 rounds. But don't worry, you couldn't play it anyway. There's no controller support. So.
True.
Yep.
Very true. It's like even in Overwatch, I think out of all the matches in Overwatch I've played, I have gotten one single play of the game.
Oh,
I'm sad that we never managed to get any paladin plays of the game because we played it so early that play of the game wasn't in it yet. I could just imagine how many I would have gotten playing as Sky.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever checked out the game Paladins? It's like a free Overwatch, basically.
I heard of it, but I didn't actually try it.
Yeah, me too. Never tried it.
That's a pretty fun one. I know a lot of people are comparing that and Overwatch, and I've actually enjoyed Paladins more than Overwatch, which a lot of my friends make fun of me for saying that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you also had people that actually wanted to play it and stick with you rather than, like, after an hour, they quit, and then there you go. Now you're stuck playing alone.
Yeah.
Although I was able to actually play Paladins alone and still enjoy it. So, I mean, there's that. And I'm not a huge fan of multiplayer shooters. I don't know about you guys, but multiplayer isn't huge for me. Like, I only enjoy multiplayer shooters if they're co-op multiplayer. I don't want to actually deal with the whole PvP.
They tend to get pretty competitive, like super fast and super easy. And if you don't have a dedicated group to play all the time with them, they get frustrating for me.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
To go with random groups and to go against an organized group and just die all the time, it's not fun for me.
No, I definitely see why.
That's usually my feeling in WoW. That's actually why I quit WoW, because back in the day, I used to play with a group, and it was really fun, play Battlegrounds in a group. But since then, I've been playing solo, and playing Battlegrounds solo in World of Warcraft is not a good experience at all. It's just, you basically try to move a mountain with your head, so yeah.
Yeah, MMOs are so focused on having groups and parties and raids and all the other stuff, and playing Final Fantasy 11 or 14, I'm just like, I just want to go kill some monsters by myself and pass the time. I don't want to worry about going in a dungeon and being responsible for keeping the heat or the aggro of a monster, and then my healer fucks up, and then I die, and then everyone dies, and they're like, oh, well, why didn't you aggro or pull aggro? And well, stop attacking it when I'm trying to pull aggro, you dick. And then it's just a big fight, and everyone gets disconnected, and then you lose friends, and you're out of a guild, and then you just stop playing for a few months.
I haven't had that experience with an MMO, but I have felt that way with, Destiny is similar enough in MMO style without being an MMO.
Oh, you haven't lived until you, rage quit a game completely for a few months.
There's definitely been games that made me pissed off enough, but I generally go back to games pretty quickly if I get pissed at them.
So we're talking about all this online stuff. Do you guys have any plans to implement any form of online into GoreScript?
You see, Sergio, we couldn't avoid this question.
I saw it on Steam. I saw a form thing, so I wasn't going to ask because you already answered it. But
our listeners may not have been on the Steam page. So I have always, to ask.
It always comes up. So for example, when it came up on the Steam forums, I would let Nikos and maybe some of the other guys handle that sort of stuff. But when it comes when it's a subject like multiplayer, I just feel the need to go personally in and just make people hate me. we're not considering any kind of multiplayer. It's not excluded forever. We might do it at some point, maybe, but there's a very slim chance of that happening. We just didn't. I never envisioned the game as a multiplayer game. It's. I don't even play shooters in multiplayer. I played them very little, so I don't really have experience with that. I wouldn't know how to. So even if we had the time and the budget to add multiplayer, I would be pretty worried because I don't really know what makes a multiplayer shooter tick.
Yeah.
So yeah, this game doesn't seem like the kind of game that would really be suited for multiplayer. True. I mean, you could set it up like original Doom style, where everybody starts with possibly like the shotgun, and then you have to pick up weapons around the field like an old school shooter. Actually, you know what? I take it back. This would be a great multiplayer game, but still, it's not required at all.
Well, the step from us, considering rocket boots and that sort of stuff, the step from us to Quake 3 is actually not that big in terms of gameplay. But in terms of actually building that and supporting it, it's a huge leap.
Yeah, and you still right now at this point, you don't know if there's going to be enough people that, especially that want to stick around for the multiplayer. Like, they might test around for a little bit, but who knows if there's going to be a community that actually wants to play a multiplayer in this game. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you don't want to dedicate the resources and then not have it work.
Yep.
It is good to see someone say, hey, listen, this is a single-player focus game, because so many games out there just implement some kind of shitty, tacked-on multiplayer that's half-assed, and it doesn't keep a community. So it's good to hear that you're just focused on doing what you want to do and doing it right.
It's so easy to go outside the track and to get just more features and more features and more features inside the game, and then to have a monstrosity of random things. And we ended up pretty early for GirlScript, and I'm super happy that Sergio was full on board with that. That better to have a few things and super polished and as they have to be, than having extra three features that would take everything away from the game.
Yeah, I definitely agree that this is this should stick as a single player, a mostly single player experience at least. Have the focus be on the single player, because it is good, and it would be nice to once those that level editor comes out, it'd be nice to be able to play other people's levels and maybe have leaderboards set up for those levels if they become popular enough.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
that's definitely a possibility, yeah.
So what is more likely to happen with the game? An online multiplayer mode, some kind of deathmatch mode, or controller support?
Okay. I imagine controller support would be much easier to implement than actually programming an online code.
it is, of course. I'm just trying to find a nice enough metaphor for all of this, but I'm failing. So, Nikos, maybe you have a better one.
I will just now say, Joe, I told you so. Please try to convince him as well on the email. You see now what I'm going through.
I'm just waiting to hear, fuck you, support. Fuck controllers, I'm done with this shit.
Well, speaking of that, let me describe our usual process at work. So Nikos and our other marketing colleague, Adi, they come up with ideas, like often. They come up with a lot of ideas. And, well, I usually have, like, a set backlog for the game. Like, I know what I'm going to be building, like, a month from now. But, you know, they just shoot these ideas at me, as they should, of course. I'm happy to hear them. But, you know, this is, like, what, 5% of them, they actually get through. So, yeah.
So you're saying they're bad at coming up with ideas.
Don't worry, this 5% is actually what I was aiming for from the beginning, so we're okay.
As long as you're meeting your goals, you're succeeding.
See, if you flood him with enough shitty ideas, the ones that you really want him to pay attention to will sound that much better.
You should join the team.
And now Sergio is like, oh, there's another bad one.
Well, we could either have Joe join the team, or you could put controller support in the game.
Well, that would be what you're useful for, because you have nothing else that you really know about programming. You'd be like, okay, how does this control scheme feel? All right.
Well, I can move and shoot. That's a positive.
You'd be like an idea guy, you know, that sort of idea guy in the studio, but you'd only have like one idea for each game. You'd be like, guys, add controller support. Please add that.
Any game that doesn't have controller support, that's his only idea for it.
I can't help that I'm a console scrub. We exist. We matter too in life. Oh, man.
Meanwhile, Sergio just has a flag in the background that just says PC Master Race.
Well, you know, I've been thinking how to decorate my house, so yeah, that sounds good.
Looks like CJ's the idea guy tonight.
Well, that's just because I'm not the one pushing stuff that he doesn't like.
By the way, CJ, I actually noticed you before, you know, before this podcast happened, before the original podcast happened, I noticed you on the leaderboards. You had a very interesting name on the leaderboards, and I'm actually, you know, monitoring them daily. So, yeah, you came to my attention very, very quickly.
Oh, Iron Fist of Snuff is interesting. Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting one. Most people don't even really get it, so I'm just glad that Steam doesn't care. I just don't think that snuff is a popular enough word to really be a problem. Like, nobody really knows what it is. Like, there's snuff films, there's the drugs, it's just like nobody knows.
Is that a Morrowind reference by any chance?
I mean, not that I know of. It could be possible. I haven't actually played Morrowind myself.
Oh, okay. Snuff, if I remember correctly, or maybe it's actually skooma or something. It's a drug from Morrowind. So I saw.
Well, I could understand that because snuff is a drug, but or it's a, yeah. If you want. I think it's also the term used for some films where it's like films of murdering people is called snuff films. It's like, well, that's,
yeah, there
up.
there was an old movie with Nicolas Cage about that, if I'm correct.
8mm, I think.
Yeah.
Yep, that was the one. Wow, that was like super old.
I actually really like that movie. I watched it like 5 times. I really enjoyed that movie.
Maybe I should see it then.
You should.
I've never seen the movie. Really, my name has so much to do with stuff. Maybe I should figure it out. I'll play through Morrowind while I'm watching that movie.
That should work really well. Multitask.
Yeah, that's going to be really easy with all the helpful pointers in Morrowind.
Anyway, final question that I have about the game, just to kind of bring things back around, is the game has an amazing soundtrack. Who did the music to the game?
You can go ahead.
Okay, Lawrence still did it. He's the guy that makes music. His studio is called Satsuma Audio. His website is satsu.ma. He's from UK, and we've worked many times with Lawrence. He does amazing work.
Is there any other games that we might know, recognize him from?
He did most of our other Amuse Sloth games, the music and the sound effects. The mobile ones, and he mentioned that he also worked on the tabletop simulator, which is became famous.
Yeah, I know that game really well.
Yeah. But he's a great guy and great artist.
Yeah, I can tell. This the soundtrack in this game is awesome. I love it.
Yeah, and now he gave us the final versions of the soundtrack, and they're even better, some of the tracks, than on the version that you played.
I really need to go back and play this again so that I can do my official review in a couple weeks.
Yay, cool.
Yeah, I will. I'll probably go through the entire 18 levels and see how the game ends.
Yeah, you should do that.
For a little preview, I didn't want to see everything yet because I wanted to be able to make sure that I could talk about something else.
not to spoil anything, but if you get to the end and if you've played the original Doom, things are going to seem very, very familiar. That's all I'm going to say.
I actually haven't beat the original Doom yet. I've gotten through, I think, 2 chapters, and then I just kind of stopped playing it. I was playing it not too long ago because they did port the original Doom to Xbox 360, and it's backwards compatible, so I was playing it not too long ago, trying to beat it on ultra-violent difficulty. I've made it through 2 chapters. It's a really good game so far. I'm gonna
Both
give my
chapters
next...
I play are really good.
Next week I'm going to give my official review on Doom.
Pretty much the feedback that we're getting so far it's really good. I mean, people are really enjoying it. But yeah, it's reviewers. Now, when the game ends up with players, I'm guessing that we'll have a lot of complaints about graphics and why doesn't it jump and things that might be very alienating for the 2017 player.
Yeah, fuck 'em.
But
I don't think that many people are going to complain about the graphics, because old school graphics are kind of making a comeback anymore. If you've noticed, there's been a lot of games with them.
You'd be surprised.
People still find ways to complain about anything. It could be the most beautiful, perfect game on the planet, and somebody will find something to complain about.
What we normally find is that there's like a barrier in terms of graphics for a lot of people. Well, hopefully not that many people, but for what we've seen so far, especially for earlier builds of the game, which looked a bit different. For the people who have actually played it, they generally, you know, they either give good reviews or they give neutral reviews. We haven't gotten a review from someone who has played it like more than, you know, the first level and it to be a bad review. It didn't happen so far.
Well, hopefully it sticks that way, because I don't really understand why it would be rated as a bad game. I mean, the only understanding I'd have is if somebody didn't play original games, so they don't really get it, and they're not enjoying it because of that, but then they're just not playing the right game for them. And it's not really the game's fault. It's more of like they just didn't have the experience that they required for it.
Yeah, and we had to be kind of very careful on how we present the game in the marketing text and stuff, in order to not misdirect anyone, not try to present something that it's not. We wanted to be super focused.
Well, it's very obvious what this game is from the start, including, like, I mean, the first sentence of the description on Steam is, GoreScript is a classic first-person shooter game, inspired by the great old classic FPS games that define the genre. I mean, it's exactly what it is.
Thank you.
Yeah, so if you go in expecting something different, I think that's your own fault. People, they'll just buy stuff and not read, so.
Well,
yeah, hopefully.
What you can also take into account is that a fairly decent amount of our player base is below the age of 15. So we, for some people, we might actually be the first contact they have with a Doom-like game. Which, of course, for me, it's an honor. I mean, if I'm the person that's, you know, the gateway drug to Doom-like games, sure, I can do that all day. You know.
Very
well,
true.
Well, I'm right above that that line that you said at 15. I'm 18, and I have played those kind of games.
God, so I think so I'm okay. Young.
I mean, the first game I ever played was Unreal Tournament, though. Which, I mean, I assume you guys have played that too.
Sure.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, who hasn't? That game's incredible.
True. Even I've
played it had that. Control support on PlayStation 2.
See, even I have played that one. So anyway, I know we've been talking for quite a while. Should probably start wrapping this up. What is next for you guys? I know you're planning on the level editor. Is there anything else that you're looking at implementing into the game, like possibly DLC levels or added levels or an added campaign? Or are you eyeing up looking at a new project from here?
At the moment, we're just focusing on getting it ready for launch. I mean, it basically is already ready. We're trying to polish it as best as we can. We have the level editor. That's definitely something that's going to be coming after the launch. Besides that, we don't have something specific in mind. That it doesn't mean nothing. You know, something could come up, but it's not something
consoles.
We can.
Consoles.
Well, I mean, maybe if the game sells 20,000 copies.
Well, yeah, of course. then it's suddenly a possibility. If yeah.
And then Nikos, what's next for Emu Sloth?
Oh, I would be glad to say, I would be happy to say that I wish next thing for a new sleuth would be GoreScript 2 or GoreScript something or GoreScript for consoles or whatever. But I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll have to see about that. And we have some other projects on the way, but it's not something that I should talk about it right now. It's too early
for anything. Okay, so they haven't been announced yet. That's fair.
No.
Is there any chance of any of Amuse Sloth's properties making a jump to consoles or over to Steam?
No, not really. The previous games are super mobile. It's only mobile. We tried with Disco Dave to port it also for Windows 10 and Windows 10 mobile and tablets. I mean, it was okay. It was a nice experiment. But mobile games, the way we did them, should stay on mobile. They wouldn't fit Steam or console or any other ports. But we never excluded the possibility of doing other games for Steam or consoles or whatever. It's just how the game, where the game fits better.
Oh, that was actually going to be my next question was... with GoreScript coming out on Steam, does that mean you guys are going to start focusing or taking on more Steam games and trying to publish them?
Well, it depends on the ideas that we have in the studio. If the game would be better suited for Steam, yeah, sure, why not? Instead of mobile.
Good stuff. Well, Sergio, Nikos, it has been fantastic having you guys on the show. Was there anything else that you guys wanted to address before we end the show?
Not really. It's the first time I have been on a podcast. Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, I'm so sorry that we were your first. On the bright side, it only goes up from here.
Well, it's been great. Thank you very much for having us here, guys.
Yeah, definitely. It's been a great experience. Ever since I've been watching podcasts for a while now. I've been watching Joe Rogan like a lot, and ever since I saw that experience, I just said, okay, I want to be on a podcast at some point. So it just happened now. So that's awesome, and thank you for that.
Well, again, I'm very sorry that we were your first.
We've ruined you for future podcasts.
They will get better from here. I promise you'll get onto actual real shows that matter and are important. But thank you again for coming on. Normally, this is the point in the show where I would ask our guests to give us some kind of final words to end the episode. But I think, Nikos, I just want to hear you say your last name one more time.
Okay, my last name is Hadzigeorgiadis.
It's amazing.
Χατζηγεωργιάδης.